Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia. I'm the second generation president of D'Elia Associates, the place where family B2B brands go to grow. And today I'm joined by Ron Senatore of Insperity. Ron has spent more than 25 years with Insperity, helping business owners navigate growth, leadership, workforce challenges, acquisitions, and transition points across a wide range of industries. In fact, he has helped more businesses than any other business performance advisor in Insperity's history. What makes Ron especially interesting for this audience is the perspective he's gained working closely with entrepreneurial and family-led companies through some of the most disruptive periods in recent history, including 9/11, the Great Recession, COVID, and others. And at the center of so many of these conversations is a question that goes far beyond HR or operations. What happens when the business becomes deeply tied to identity, purpose, and personal legacy? Ron, welcome to Growing Up B2B.
Hey, Ed, thank you much for having me. It's a pleasure to join you and look forward to spending time with you this afternoon.
100%, me too. So take us back. You joined Insperity in 1999 at a point where you were looking for a new direction. What was it back then, if you could take yourself back, Ron, that about this opportunity that really resonated with you as a person?
Yeah, and I'll give you a little insight. So I had graduated college back in 1994 and tried my hand at Wall Street for about 4.5 years. And I don't think I had the makeup and the intestinal fortitude for it, to be candid with you. And so I decided back in May of 1999 that I needed to chart a new career path. And I really didn't have a clear direction in terms of what what I wanted to do, what I was looking for. I knew what I was looking for. I was looking for a career opportunity rather than a job, a place that I could really find meaning, purpose, and relevance. And I mean this in all sincerity. Went into it with the mentality of that this next opportunity would be my last opportunity. So to sit here and say, you know, now 27 years later, that I had the foresight to know that was going to happen, that would be an untrue statement. But sometimes in life, you do end up in the right place in the right time in the right day. And I did. And so, you know, I grew up in a family business. My mom and dad owned, they were contractors in Yonkers, New York, in a roofing company. And they were epitome of what we define as a small business. My dad was the guy who bid the job. He sold it. He installed it. If the roof leaked in the middle of the night, he ran out and fixed it. My mom was the treasury, the secretary, the bookkeeper. She made dinner for the Yellow Pages representative when they were selling, you know, trying to sell an ad, and breakfast for the auditor from the New York State Workers' Comp Bureau. Right? They were the extent of the ownership and leadership group. And so, you know, I really didn't understand what it meant to be an entrepreneur and to take that greater responsibility. But I did know that it gave people a measure of flexibility and freedom. And so when I went through the interview process with the time was known as Administaff, it became Insperity. The idea of having an entrepreneurial mind and an entrepreneurial spirit appealed to me. I just really never understood, to be honest, appreciated. It came years later that what the risk that these individuals, men, women, take every single day in acting as an entrepreneur. I didn't have that. I didn't have to do that. And so I like to say I've lived vicariously through their eyes. And I've worked with, I've met thousands, if that's an understated term, supported several hundred individuals, organizations, and we'll get more into that in a moment in support of what I would call as the human resources needs and objectives.
So I got to ask a question then, because I didn't realize you came out of a family business. Had you ever considered joining said business?
No.
No?
So
Okay.
I laugh for a reason. So my parents had two kids, myself and my brother. We're 4 years apart. We were first, well, we were both first generation. I was first generation college. So my dad was a gray and blue collar individual, right? And so I think he instilled upon us the idea of higher education provides you a greater, I don't want to say it this way to be disparate, not to be disparaging, a better quality of life. We could argue over what's more exhausting, physical labor or mental labor. I tend to think that those who do physical labor, no disrespect to those who do mental or exposed to mental labor. But my father instilled in us to basically stay in school, become educated, and find relevance and success without having to roll up your sleeves. And get, dirty on a day in and day out basis. I think that the definition of dirty changes based upon what you do and your responsibilities. But I laugh because my dad could build a house out of toothpicks. My brother and I couldn't hang a picture on a wall if our lives depended upon it. We didn't want to know anything about it, and he made sure we didn't want to know anything about it either. So it worked out well.
I see. I see. So going back to 99, then in MINISTEFS to become Insperity, the concept, the profession, the PEO, the professional employer organization, that was still brand new for the most part. So what did you see in that, Ron, early on that made you say, hey, there's something here, there's something that I believe in?
So I'll say this to you. I came into an organization that had unequivocally no relevance here in the Northeast. Now, I live in New York, so the company's a Texas-based organization. It was already 11 years in business by the time they went public, and I joined 2 years later. So it already, I want to say at that time, it was already a $500 million organization at that point. So it had foundation, it had infrastructure. And so what it didn't have is didn't have a market presence in the Northeast. So at the ripe age of 26, let me not kid anyone, I didn't have any true measure of business acumen. We grew up and I say family business, it was extremely small family business. My knowledge and expertise came from having an open-minded mentality of just going out and speaking with people on a consistent basis. And so the truth was, I was a big advocate until to this day of what we call knocking on doors and kissing babies and shaking hands. And that's how I began, and I would talk to anyone that would listen. And so what I came to realize is that, entrepreneurs are progressive mindsets, at least most of them are. They believe they have found a place for themselves in life, in business, in society that afforded them an opportunity to kind of create something in their own vision, whether it's even if it's a multi-generational business. Every next generation wants to do something a little bit different than the ones before them. If I worked for a company prior to this, I want to take that knowledge and experience, and I want to better it for myself, my family, and potentially my employees. And then I'll go a step further, your community and society as well. You kind of transcend. You get to a point sometimes where you transcend a business and you become a brand, and you really change the way people act and behave. So from the perspective of what I came to realize was that everyone's somewhat of an individualist, right? They all have this inherent belief of what they're doing is going to be meaningful and purposeful. But what I came to realize is that they were so focusing on day in and day out basis from a financial perspective, right? From a how do you reach your customer perspective? When you reach the customer perspective, how do you create the experience for them? When you create the experience for them, how does that resonate with that experience? They are then there outwardly thinking about you to other customers. So you're growing your efficiency without having to spend a myriad of dollars in marketing, right? When it got to the people part of the business, I came to realize that these are all individualists and individuals. The people part of the business was very uniform and flat, and they all managed it to some degree in a reactive and reluctant point. So along came this organization that really pioneered the concept of what we know as professional employee organizations that really gave a progressive approach to how people and business owners would define its role and responsibility of what we'll call human resources administration, management, compliance. Going back then, and to go to be candid, yes, think about it. It was something that I use the term disruptive, in the sense it was not the norm. It's not how people acted and behaved. They were inherently doing everything on their own. So not only did they focus on finance, sales, marketing, technology was still pretty young and for business at that time, but the reality is they were also involved in accounting, and they were involved in marketing, and they were involved in HR and then legal, right? And so you began to realize over the course of time, and it's been adopted by generations since then, is, if you focus on what your core competencies are, you're going to do it with better energy and better enthusiasm and better spirit than if you have to then focus on that plus everything in the peripheral. So I tend to think, to a degree, what we provide is on the peripheral, right? It's not that it directly impacts your revenue, but it can. It can indirectly impact your revenue if you have the right people with the right culture and they understand their importance and relevance. Well, we'll get more into this. Instead of thinking about people and the impact they have on your bottom line adversely, think about people and the role they play on the top line of your company.
Excellent. So, across your career, you spent a tremendous amount of time in many, in and out of many organizations, but especially around a lot of family-owned businesses, even kind of being born out of one. What do you'd say people looking on the outside often misunderstand about the mindset or the thought process around the leader of a family-governed business?
I mean, my immediate reaction is, I think it's very hard to put yourself in, even as a consultant that has supported hundreds of organizations. You can sit there and be somewhat judgmental about where the opportunity is for them to better themselves. But what you really have to understand is there's such an emotional aspect of it as well. There are the your you know it's in it's the personalities, it's the people, it's the family dynamic, it's does everyone have, and it very rarely it does everybody have the same purpose and agenda? And that changes. Look, it also changes. You could start a business that was your granddad's, and then there's two sons in the business, and then the sons get, or the daughters get married, they have a personality and they have an influence. And then there's key employees that are there that, may have a greater role and importance. And I see this quite often than the next generation of children that are, I don't want to say entitled, but, are expected to carry it forward. And there's conflict there. I'm going to tell you from my personal experience, the part that we generally, unless you really become personal and intimate with those entrepreneurs and those family businesses, and sometimes it's not in the business. I've had my best conversations sitting in a bar late at night or on a Saturday morning when we can have an intimate conversation. It's very different to be a business leader of a privately held company that, granted you could be answering, or an operator-led company that's answering to a family office or a private equity firm. But when you're answering to your family, and you have their personal needs and their personal interests and staff, I think, I have a tremendous amount of respect for those individuals, because it's not easy. It's certainly not easy.
In fact, when we were speaking before this, you started recounting a story of, I believe it was a second generation specialty manufacturing leader, second gen, late 60s. And, when we were talking about the business, I think he remarked, "This is my life." In other words, this is my life. So, how often do you run into that sentiment among the family governed businesses that you interact with? Do you see that a lot?
I think what it again, I'm going to say this to you. I think there's a generational aspect of that. And I think as generations are getting younger, I mean, I'm 53 to be 54. So my peer group, the people that I've aligned myself with throughout my career, I didn't realize either how young I was, or how old they were, or maybe how young they were. But my peer group is now an audience of people that are, in their late 50s to early 70s, that are aging up and aging out, right? And part of it is, I think you have to have, I think that what you have to ask yourself is what fulfills you, right? So There are business owners that have an identity crisis, which is their business is their identity. And I asked this gentleman outright. I said, he's got it's a second generation business, but he's 69. It was the father-in-law's business, so it's his wife and his sister-in-law are truly the, in essence, owners of the, or heirs of the business. He has two daughters. Neither one of them have a true involvement in the business. No one is at this point in life in a relationship where there's a son-in-law or daughter-in-law that is being groomed. And so, to this day, still showing up at 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, 5 days a week. And I asked the question. We were away 2 weeks ago. And I said, why? He said, what else do you want me to do? He said, I don't know anything else at this point. And I think part of it is that I think gonna go generationally, you have that belief that it is all you. You're carrying the boulder all times. There's no one else who can bear the weight. You wouldn't want them to bear the weight. You may have key employees. They're not blood. And sometimes what you find is those key employees have aged up right alongside you. And the idea of potentially creating equity for them. Well, that wasn't part of it. They didn't make the initial, it wasn't part of the investment, or they don't have the equity, the ability to buy into the equity. So, you see that in that audience. And again, that's just from, I think, how people have been raised. I think as we move down, to a younger audience where they look up at their parents, like we all do, we all think I have a 9-year-old who thinks I'm the dumbest person on earth at this point. So, we all look upwards and say, well, we're smarter than the next. I think there is something to be said where, a product like Insperity's acting as the single source solution has found a relevance because we look up and say, why God's name would you do everything? There's a better quality of life. There's a greater efficiency. My wife uses a term a lot called less is more, right? The less noise in our life, the better off we're going to be. So, I think there's something to be said to that where, it is, I think, let me say it this way and I'll stop. It's you come to an identity crisis and you have to ask yourself, have I gotten everything that I want from this? Am I fulfilled? And, it may be hard to let go at first. I was with a gentleman the other day who recently sold his business and he said, I'm getting really good at doing nothing. He said, it took me a hard time. It took me a while. But I'm getting really good at doing nothing now. And so he found an opportunity to sell his specific business to a private equity firm and has enjoying life at 60 years old and in great health, at an early point, it's still an early age of his life.
And that's wonderful to see. And I don't know, maybe the 9-year-old's not the smartest person in the house. Maybe it's your wife. Less is
Well,
more.
she thinks she is. We still think she is.
So, this raises another question. You've probably seen it play out, and I think maybe you were starting to define that as that one gentleman who say, "Hey, this is my life," is the warning signs. What are some that you've seen by virtue of your vantage point of so many different configurations of so many businesses, many family-led, where the founder or the previous generation has waited too long to really think meaningfully and usefully about transition, succession, or continuity of the business? What are some of the things that you look for or just inherently see as you're engaging a new business for the first time?
I'll use a word, and I'll say it's stale, right? You become stale, and I mean that is where, risk is not something that you're inclined to take anymore. You have found a place in your life, you're comfortable. Like I hear quite often that, what I want for my business and what I need for my business are two different things, right? And you sit there and you ask yourself, well, what do you really want from it, right? There's a difference between want and need, right? And they generally don't match each other, right? They're very different. So I think what you find is that there's opportunities that are there, but you may not be willing to take them, right? I sit with plenty of business owners that have said, I need an influx of capital to continue to stay at the forefront and take advantage of opportunities are there, But I'm what's the return for me? At this point, how much more leverage do I want to create? Because am I doing it for myself or maybe somebody else? And I hate to say it, sometimes it's, it may be your family. At the end of the day, now you're in essence financing something for them that may not be what's right for you, the business, or them for that matter. So I think staying at, you could even go around the conversation around AI as elusive as it is right now. I think we witnessed in Wall Street this aura of it, and a lot of major organizations, and we look at some of the big name companies who put billions and billions of dollars in it, and it gets everyone excited, and the market rose, and then here we are, kind of 2 years later, market's asking us, well, where's the reward for it? And the reward's not there yet, right? It may be there, and so what happens in the mindset of the small business owners, who that tidal wave. They get the last of it, right? They don't get the reward initially. They get the back end of it, and they're sitting there trying to figure out, well, how do I adapt to this? And the reality of this, for what I've seen in most small businesses and the conversation I have, is they don't, right? Because if I'm operating a business that has 25, 30, 35 employees, those people are generally doing a multiple of responsibilities. It's not very clear defined by layers of people. So the reality of it is, it becomes. And jumping around a little bit, but it becomes distracting, right? It becomes distracting to their business. And again, I think there becomes where you just say, well, you know what? Do we invest the time? Do we invest the resources? You know what? No, I can't. And I don't have the focus and the bandwidth and the capital. So I'll just stay where I am. And then you start to see sometimes people become more progressive and kind of pass it by.
So in terms of the companies, Ron, that you work with, I mean, they range in terms of size, but I think 10 to 500 employees is a band where you have had a lot of experience. And usually that family governed enterprise often lives typically in that band, not every, but typically, right? So, you referenced a very interesting point that, when you walk in, you say it looks stale. You see a staleness about it that raises a maybe a little bit of a red flag. But from your perspective and seeing so many different businesses, what would you say separates the ones that are able to scale successfully from ones that stay in that reactive mode, if you will?
I think it's to the, and I'll say this to you, it's a great question, which is, if I were to sit in my life here and say, show me a commonality, a theme across the organizations that you have engaged that are good companies, because I truly believe the large majority of businesses that I've met in my career are good companies, right? If you help me understand and say, okay, wait a minute, what takes a difference of a company that goes from good to great as a small business, I think it starts with, number one, is the mindset of the business owner. Even though he may not have the financial wherewithal, he might not have the intellectual capital, he might not have the bandwidth at the time, he or she exudes the confidence in themselves or the desire that to be better, right? Not playing the proverbial victim. But they want to be better. And so they'll listen and they'll want to learn. And they listen and they learn from experiences of their peers and professionals. So number one is, yeah, you have to have the mindset to be better. And I can tell, look, not to sound pompous in any manner. I think when you sit with enough entrepreneurs and business owners and business leaders, you have a pretty good read on a person within a matter of minutes, whether they have the mindset to be better, right? That doesn't mean that they're broken. I want to preface that. That doesn't mean they're broken. It doesn't mean they're desperate. It doesn't mean they're destitute. But you can have a pretty good read on someone's personality, whether they truly exude the confidence to be better. The second thing in my mind is that they are smart enough to recognize that the people that work for them are the best and or worst. You could put any word next to it: asset, marketing piece, liability. If you don't think that people are the defining factor that take a good company to a great company, you're lost. You're lost. Because when you have an environment when you can create an environment where people are not thinking about the opportunity you give them as a job, but the way I thought about it as a career opportunity. When people aren't looking at their paycheck in a cash compensation perspective, they're looking at what it means in the total compensation perspective. When people's voices are both listened to and heard, and not that you're going to affect change for everything you hear, but you're astute enough to realize that if I ask them a question and they give me an answer, that I don't at least acknowledge them, the reality of it is then I'm putting myself in a position of a disadvantage. Because if you can create an environment like that, people will give you discretionary effort. That's a key word, because if you can get people to give discretionary effort, you're going to be a more profitable business. Your business will be worth more money when the time comes to Mr. and Mrs. Family-owned business that I'm looking to sell a part or all of it. And you'll see those that have a true people strategy are more profitable businesses. They're worth more money. That's a fact of life.
That's a huge point. That's a huge point. So out in the landscape, there's countless organizations today that offer a variety of HR and business, I'll just call them business performance services. So as you look at that landscape, and you know, the landscape has grown up since you've tracked your career. When you look at it today, what do you think continues to separate Insperity as an organization from the rest of the pack?
So I'll answer this way. From a historical perspective, I think the industry of professional employer organizations was founded upon a very, and I say transactional. I think payroll administration and workers' compensation and health insurance, it to me is a very transactional relationship. There's not a lot of intimacy in that. And then if you are viewed and portrayed in that manner, there's a life to every relationship, because at the end of the day, transactions become commoditized. And there are companies that will always be someone will be a lower price point than the next, right? And I think where I think the PEO industry itself, being a little bit of a historian, has kind of found using that term in a little bit of a stale state, is that message that I somewhat, and I hate using the term pioneered, but championed is a good word to put it, back in 1999, it's been heard, right? And it was heard from countless people like me. You don't have to hear it from people like me anyway. You can go out and you can run it through ChatGPT or Claude, and then you'll get all the answers that you need. So that's not defining market separation. What I find defines market separation, and I say for Insperity, more defined as a business service organization than professional employer organization, is the depth of talent and technology that we afford a small to medium-sized business owner, leader, board of directors, private equity firm, family office. And I think what that means to me is that there is an intimacy that we have the ability to create with those who want to have an intimacy, where we are working alongside. You bring up the market of 10 to 500. I'm often asked, okay, that's a pretty wide market. Where do you think your greatest impact is made? I would tell you that it tends to be somewhere between the 30 to 50 to the very low end, 150 to 200 to the high end, because there's where there's an individual wearing that role. Now, and that may not be an earned role. It may simply be, hey, I listen, you know what? You pulled the short straw today. Go get business cards made. You just became my chief people officer, right? But even when that role is earned and there is someone there, I go back years ago when I walked in the room. That person, if brought in by you, Mr. CFO, was looking at you and I out of one, out of both eyes, which is, why am I here? And which one of the two you're looking to get rid of me? That is not the case anymore. Most of the outreaches that we get are from people that are in the HR profession, working for small to medium-sized businesses, and have the support of ownership and leadership because they know this has become a responsibility more of not one person. It's a responsibility of multiple people. So you have to ask yourself, right? If I've got to, do I make a greater investment? Am I building a team? Am I licensing technology? And again, go back to the multi-generation business owner that fits, that let's go to the my peer group. Is that an investment you're willing to make? The answer generally is no, especially if you're looking at the end of the rainbow being an exit strategy for your business. So they're very supportive as opposed to reluctant in engaging us as a solution provider. But the key is what I'm leading to is that we have that ability to help that company think strategically, not reactively, to think about the impact of people on the top line, not the bottom line. And it's not by individuals like me. It's the individuals that we directly employ in Sperity here in the United States to provide the HR support and then embrace it in technology platforms that are proprietary to Insperity.
So in many ways, practicing what you preach. Great team, great technology, great capability,
Absolutely.
always evolving. Just exactly what you look for in a great partner.
Yep.
Next Insperity customer.
Yep.
So before this episode, we were talking a little bit. I think you were just coming back from Association for Corporate Growth, the ACG DealMap
Yeah.
conference. So in your career, Ron, you've been also touching on and involved with private equity firms, probably several M&A situations.
Sure.
So certainly, as we just spoke to, people, hugely influence valuation and deal success, right? A great team, and the buyer maybe wants to keep that great team intact and so forth.
Sure.
So, could you talk for a minute about what you're seeing right now in the landscape of private equity and what you're seeing coming to fruition right now? Any observations you made from the last conference that you'd wish to
Yeah.
share?
I think the one thing we're witnessing is that there certainly is a wealth of capital that's available, but it's not being deployed aggressively. Right. I think part of it is valuations of businesses are still high relative to the price points that most of the equity community is looking to pay to gain partial interest, controlling interest. Right. I think that's part of it. And I think that's the COVID hangover that still exists. We gave this country gave a lot of money to people that in many cases never had accessibility to money before. So we watched hiring. We, as an industry and organization, directly benefited from that. We saw hiring at a path that we never saw before. We saw compensation being paid that we had never saw before. And so then, when that all came to an end, well, somebody had to pay for it, right? Money's not free. And so now we've been in an inflationary period where the cost of operating your business is too high relative perspective of what it used to be. I hear often we're very heavy in expense. Heavy in overhead, which and put that aside, even if we could borrow money, lending terms aren't favorable, right? So we have equity firms that are held in investments longer than they want to. We have businesses that would like to find themselves in a partial full liquidity, and it really has been a fairly slow market for the last couple of years. So what we're seeing more often is what we would call carve outs. And interestingly enough, what I've worked with and in the midst of in the last few months, probably have had more conversations, what we call with business transformation teams. Business transformation teams are basically helping create cohesion, form a group of people that are being stood up that were part of potentially something larger. Now, that may be something from international, right? That may be something from something domestic for that matter. But how do I, in simple terms, take a group of people that worked for a company that might have had, and I'll use an example without being specific by name recently, that had several hundred employees where a private equity firm would have liked to exit the transaction in whole. The valuations, they're not. They need to show some measure of returns to the investors who have in this for longer than they want. And so they're bringing in, they're carving out pieces of it. I'll take this segment of the market, this business, I'm going to stand it up. So in this particular case, there's 65 employees that cross three different states. They were used to a high level of, from a transactional standpoint. You know, you're asking people now to be CEOs and CFOs. They were not the CEO and CFO of the greater organization. So now you're something that they assumed just took care of itself has become part of their indirect responsibilities. They're not going to do it, but they're going to have someone dedicating time and resources. And so, wait a second, hold on. We identified these people, but this wasn't in their job description. So wait, let's go find a partner, right? And so there becomes Insperity as to be that solution provider to provide that common infrastructure they're accustomed to. The other part is that these people now have to define their own company culture, right? They have to create their own vision and their own roles and their own responsibilities. And they don't have the depth of an HR team that existed before. So we become a, and I hate using the term plug and play because it's not, it's custom, but we have that ability. And I think the key thing that I can tell to that community, those that are part of it, is it's two things they want. They want execution and efficiency, right? So, you know, it's not clean, as I tell my team, who get frustrated. Because it's going to move, it's going to ebb and flow, but you have to be adaptable, and you have to execute, and you have to execute flawlessly, because those transaction teams are vying for that greater opportunity, and that great opportunity is not just one transaction. They're hoping to be the transaction team for a number of transactions that come to private equity. So, again, they're. You know, there are moments that I've witnessed here in my career. Financial crisis is 9/11, New York Superstorm Sandy, housing collapses. As long as something is moving, there's opportunity, right? And so right now, as we know, you know, we talked, the small business market has been fairly stagnant for the better part of a few years for the reasons that I shared. But what we're seeing in continue to fuel transactions for us. Is in that carve-out community. We're seeing that quite often.
That's very interesting. So when you look at the band that you work in, whether you narrowly define it in the 25 to 150 or broader to the 10 to 500, through the lens of your work with Insperity, what do you see are some of the biggest workforce or leadership challenges that small business community is facing right now?
Yeah, I think the and your answer is, it's almost where you have to almost forget what the impact of COVID was upon people, and have the intestinal fortitude and the foresight to say, and I say foresight meaning looking forward, that somewhere what we looked like as a country before 2019, and somewhere we look like as a country, and I say country workforce, where we sit at 2026, is what the world will be as we go forward, right? Look, the hardest part that I see that people deal with is there is a look, I worked in an office from the day that I graduated college consistently 5 days a week. I would say up until about 2 years prior to COVID, I was pretty consistently, you know, working from an office in an office environment. You know, I only speak to my own experiences. I have two kids that are college graduates a year ago. They never worked in an office and they never worked from home. But the idea of hearing that you work remote is incredibly appealing, you know. And so I think the challenge that businesses have is that you have this society where what we've done in allowing this separation is the term I'll use, right? Of being together, of learning and collaborating from one another. And I'm not saying it's in every business. Central businesses obviously have been together all without. The lead financial services organizations are in the office 4 to 5 days a week. I think for most of our other clients, going to be very honest, it is much more grayer. Right. When you talk to those business leaders, what the challenge is this, it becomes a matter of the growth and aptitude, right? Because there's something to be said of someone like you and I, who have the intellectual knowledge, have the capacity, because we've experienced, and I say capacity, the capacity to continue to be effective in an environment where we're not in the office together, and say, let those people continue to do what they want. But the reality of it is, it's not helping the next generation of people. And business owners are struggling with that tremendously. You're looking at a pretty wide gap between the aptitude of your tenured staff that have been with you, that have been in the environment, that have been, have the personal relationships and the professional relationships that go beyond the office, to where now, where many of what we do, much of what we do, is relegated to the world of Zoom, right? So how do I transfer knowledge, capacity to another generation of people when we're not there together? Because the other part about Zoom and Teams, whatever platform you're on, we pined for it during COVID, and there afterwards we just wanted affection and attention from someone else because we're all trapped in our homes. But what's become, the way I see it now, it's become very matter of fact. You hop on six or seven Zooms in a day. I'm not going to lie to anyone, by the fourth one, I forgot who I talked to the first one, right? So it's become a very kind of check the box way, but what we're losing, and kind of go back to this, and kind of going to go full circle, is we're losing the relationship aspect. How you get to intimately know. I can tell you backstories of people like the one I explained and others, because I've gotten to know them on a personal level. Not that you can't get to know somebody in Zoom on a personal level, but there's nothing like being in someone's office. There's nothing like going to a restaurant. There's nothing like spending, although I don't golf, 4 hours on a golf course, if that's what a ground of golf is. But having the personal aspect with someone creates endearing relationships that people then keep one another front of mind, and help grow businesses and create transactions and create opportunities. When we sit like this away from each other, it's much harder. Not that it can't happen, it's just not as real and genuine and sincere.
That's a great point. That's a great point. And it kind of leads to my next question. As you look ahead now to the future business owners, and you might see some of them in your portfolio of clients up and coming or stepping up or those transitions happening, what concerns you the most, Ron, and what gives you greater optimism?
Yeah, look. From a concern is, I would tend to think is a measure of accountability. What's the accountability? And I think you see that within every business. From family-owned businesses to privately held companies to publicly traded companies. Like, what's the accountability in terms of, are we all working in the common for the common good, for the common result? And are we accountable to one another? Right. And I think there's something to be said when we are separated, frayed, and fragmented, that accountability, when you're able to sit and have that endearing conversation. It's the same thing I think when we look at, the what we expect of our children. I told my kids when they went to college, I said, look, dad's going to make sure that you're going to have an education. You're going to graduate college with no debt. But what you're going to do is you're going to intern sophomore year to junior to senior year, so that you're marketable, right? Because that way, that business owner, business leader, at least feels there's been a sense of accountability. I think we did a pretty, I think we got away from that. I think we got away from that, and we're starting to see the shift back to that. So that's me. My concern is. Sometimes we live in a place sometimes where it's everybody else's fault but our own, and we want to make it that way. But I think if we can, I think we're moving back in the right direction, where accountability for yourself and holding each other accountable. I think, to me, that's what defines, American entrepreneurial success, is the accountability to one another to create something that's meaningful purpose, not just for yourself, but for those around you, for society, for your community. So that, to me, is, I think we're moving in that direction. So I would say my greatest concern is my greatest optimism. I think the other part about it is this, is an optimism, is that, we've been in a down cycle for small businesses. We haven't seen growth. There's been no growth within small businesses, for all the reasons, hangover from COVID, greater expense of operating the business, unfavorable lending terms. You want to put tariffs, you want to put AI. You want to put the, unfortunately, the circumstances around the globe. Because at the end of the day, what the small business owner doesn't have is he or she does not have, I would say the wherewithal to survive unrest, right? And unsettlement. I think that's the one thing we all pine for, right? If we just knew what tomorrow brought, that we would know. And I think, look, to the testament of that, the small business owners in the last few years have certainly shown resiliency. I mean, for the love of Mary, what came through COVID? I think they've even become more resilient in the period after COVID, right? There has to be a headwind in front of us, right? That will drive growth in small businesses once again. We're not going to work for seeking employment for the companies that work for the Dow because they're stable and they're brand names that we like to allure ourselves to. But I think going to work in the small business market becomes very appealing once again. For another generation of people, with the hope that what you're doing is meaningful, impactful, both for the individual, yourself, your company, society, and community. I think we'll see that when that happens. That's the one thing I probably can't answer you. Everything you asked me thus far is, what's the indicator that's coming? And I can't see one yet, but we've got to be headed in that direction because it's cyclical.
Great points. Great points all around. So I don't, you're very humble by nature, Ron. I don't wish to embarrass you, but when I bring up your name in circles of people and in Insperity, there's almost a level of reverence held that you're held in such high regard in the organization. And I think a lot of that's attributed to the fact that you've been there for 26 years, same company. What, on a personal level, what keeps you engaged and motivated year after year, staying with Insperity, continuing to spread its good word and message, and continuing to go out and serve populations under the Insperity name?
And I go back to this. I started off earlier when we first started this conversation that, look, I joined the company at 26 years old. I was desperate for somebody to give me an opportunity, right? And I am to this day incredibly appreciative, humbled by the opportunity I was given and what it has provided for myself, from a career fulfillment perspective. A personal fulfillment perspective. I mean, to think that you take a job, and it was at that time. I'm not going to tell you it was a career at that moment. I'd hoped it would be a career, but out of desperation because I wasn't working and I was broke. To think about what it became, I've interacted with thousands and thousands of business owners. I've get a chance to support several hundred individuals and organizations on a day in and day out basis. And if you say, what do you mean by support? I just kind of think in the role of a valued resource as a trusted advisor. I think, from a standpoint internally, I'm a big proponent of using the term pay it forward. If I can help someone, and I don't have all the answers or most of the answers, I probably have some of them because just based upon time and experience. But if I could help, bring awareness to an individual within our organization or within our community or within a client about, how we are impactful to them, how Insperity really does make companies better organizations. And I, when you go from, I often say this, you do something enough times, whether it's good or bad, you get confidence in it, right? That's not always good, right? I often joke, listen, if you want to be the guy who bellies up at the bar and drinks 30 cans of beer and walks out sober, that guy drank, or that young lady drank, a lot of beer to be able to do that, right? That's not necessarily a good habit, right? But what happens is, you can even use the sports analogy. If you want to be the greatest foul shooter of all time, whether it was, Ray Allen or Steph Curry, I assume they probably have the highest conversion rate. You got to think about how many foul shots did they take throughout their life. So from my perspective, it's been a matter of giving yourself the opportunity to see enough people. And when you see enough people, what happens, you go from confidence to a conviction. You just have a belief that what you know and what you've experienced is going to help, be helpful to other people. And the testament to, for me, the success is not by my own. It's what I've witnessed. It's when people move on from their businesses and they find somewhere else and they bring you along with them because of the great experience that they've had with you And the great experience at the company to me is the ultimate reward.
Awesome. Awesome. Gosh, Ron, I feel like we could talk for hours, if not days. You're truly a wealth of information, and your insights and your wisdom are really remarkable. But I'm
Thank
going to
you.
end with the last question. If any of our listeners did want to know more about you, about your journey, or about Insperity, what's the best way for them to connect with you?
Yeah, I mean, by all means, feel free. You can send me an email. It's Ron dot my last name Senatore at Insperity, Insperity.com, or my cell phone by phone or by text is 914-954-0741. And I tell you, anyone who has a greater interest or has a need, a thought, an idea. Whether it's a qualified opportunity for Insperity or not, I enjoy interacting with business owners, business leaders, and if I can help anyone in any given way, or perhaps there's someone in my network of people, individuals, and organizations that you're trying to reach, by all means, I'm more than happy to help. I try to do that on a daily basis.
Wonderful, wonderful. So to wrap up, Ron, what stands out is your remarkable perspective on business, and that behind every business challenge, whether it's growth, succession, acquisition, or culture, it's about the people,
Yeah.
right? People that are trying to navigate uncertainty, responsibility, and sometimes big change. And in family businesses especially, those decisions are rarely just operational. They're often quite deeply personal. Ron, thank you so much for sharing your insights, your experience, your perspectives. Again, folks, we've been speaking with Ron Senatore of Insperity, and I'm your host, Ed D'Elia. And this has been another episode of Growing Up B2B. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Ron, thanks so much for joining us today.
And thank you for inviting me to participate. It was great experience and to spend the time with you. You know, your work that you're doing to bring awareness to the small business community is certainly welcomed and appreciated by all. So thank you.
Thank you, Ron. Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.delianet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at DeliaNet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.